I've been working on the railroad, or simply called Railroad, in a minor key no less, from Bela Fleck and Abigail Washburn. They are our guest on this evening's Flipside. They're coming to Knoxville, by the way, and performing at the Bijou Theater on Saturday, February the 20th. Their new recording is called Bela Fleck and Abigail Washburn. It's been nominated for a couple of Grammys, and it is chock full of every type of banjo you can imagine. It's really splendid. What can you tell me about the Missing Link banjo? I understand that you created a banjo just for this recording.
Yes, that's the baritone banjo. And when Abby and I started talking about doing this, I was wondering if there was a way for us to separate our ranges a little bit, because we both, although we play in very different styles, Abby being a clawhammer player and me being a bluegrass player, our banjos are tuned pretty much the same. And I wondered what would happen if we had, I just wanted a way to get beneath Abby's banjo and play more of a bass role without going all the way down to the cello banjo or bass banjo. So I had talked to a few different banjo companies about the idea of a banjo with a slightly bigger pot. The pot is the resonating area. And the gold tone made me one, and it worked out really well. And eventually now it's on the market as the Missing Link.
We do have a dream someday, Todd, to actually make a record with and tour with a banjo orchestra. So this is all, you know, this is all just, you know, trying to create an environment where people understand that we're headed in the direction of a huge banjo production.
Yeah, someday. This is set up. This is early days.
The CD actually comes with lots of liner notes explaining all the different types of banjos. There's a fretless banjo. There's a ukulele banjo, and I believe your son Juno is posing with the ukulele banjo on the inside of the CD. Now, I've heard from reliable sources that despite him being completely encircled with banjos everywhere, that at the end of the day and at the beginning of the day, he's actually a lot more interested in golf. I'm kind of having a hard time understanding that.
How do you think we feel? Kind of like what was that TV show where the parents were hippies and so the son was like a business guy?
Oh, Family Ties.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like that because we're not athletes, we're banjo players, and our son seems to want to be a golfer.
He's very intense about it. It's not just like, oh yeah, 2.5-year-old. He just kind of likes to play miniature golf or something. He eats, breathes, and sleeps golf. He says golf in his sleep. He wakes up and he says, let's talk about golf. Before he goes to bed at night, we have to sing him the 12 Days of Golf Christmas.
Yeah, all the Christmas songs became golf songs. Jingle golf, jingle golf. Golf, 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 golf.
Golf rest, you merry gentlemen.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Right. So this goes on.
Yep.
Wow.
But he's getting good, too. He's, you know, I mean, he gets it in a lot of the time. When we started out, it was a lot of sort of aimless, you know, hitting it around. But now, you know, at miniature golf, for instance, he gets it all. Every hole is three shots at the most.
And yeah. We played 36 holes the other day in a row.
You know, I can't imagine that he's doing this as an act of rebellion. He's just too young for that. But where did he get this? I mean, I can't see where he would get this.
I have to say, both of my grandfathers were professional athletes. One was a basketball player on farm teams in the Midwest, and one was a tennis pro in Chicago. And so he does come by it, honestly, genetically, to have some kind of obsession with a sport of some sort. And my dad is a real big fan of watching golf, and he enjoys playing golf, too. So this summer we were visiting my parents, and my dad was watching golf. And Juno sat on the couch and watched some golf with my dad, and he was just sunk. That was it.
But literally 15 minutes of it.
Yeah, just 15 minutes.
And boom, that was it. He understood the game. It made sense to him. It was very simple. The goal of the game, to get the ball in the hole, seemed very gettable. And from then on, that's pretty much all he's wanted to do. You know, I tried out for basketball in high school, and they told me they already had one. So that's pretty much my sports participation in life.
That's funny.
Thanks, honey.
Speaking of that humor, one of the things I really noticed when I saw your show down in, I was in Clearwater, Florida, was there's quite a bit of humor in the show and in the in-between song things, and also sometimes within the songs themselves, a little surprise humor bits. Did it start out this way? Was this your idea, or is this something that evolved?
You know, I think we sensed it in our very first show that we ever played together in 2006, I think it was. Before we even ever had the Sparrow Quartet, we played a show for my grandmother at her church in Evanston, Illinois, the Unitarian Church of Evanston. And Bela and I were a little nervous about it because we had never played together before. And it was basically just Bela playing on a lot of songs that I already knew how to play. But what really surprised us, I mean, we thought musically it would probably be fine enough. But the big surprise was sitting on stage together felt really, really comfortable and fun. And we were making lots of jokes and making each other laugh and making the audience laugh. And I don't know, we were just surprised by that. And it's continued to this day that that's been just a basic piece of what we do when we're on stage together. We just really enjoy laughing with each other and with the audience, even though a lot of our music is really quite intense and subject matter that you wouldn't find necessarily to be humorous all the time. But yeah, we just want to have a good time.
Well, the subject of death comes up a lot on this CD, and near death comes up quite a bit as well.
I would say most of them have something to do with death. That's hilarious, isn't
funny,
it?
Sweetie.
Yeah.
The instrumentals don't have as much to do with death. I guess we're all heading there eventually, so the fast ones, maybe we'll get there a little quicker.
Well, speaking of instrumentals, there are several great ones on there. New South Africa is one that seems to go over really well live, and it's also a showpiece for Abby's solo, which she usually doesn't take on the clawhammer. How was that?
Yeah, when Bela was introducing the song to me, I was a little nervous I wouldn't even be able to play it. Even just playing the chords seemed like a challenge. But Bela's really been a wonderful mentor to me in terms of expanding beyond my comfort zone, or honestly what I generally, my general sort of goal on the banjo isn't to solo or to show what I can do, technically. I've always really enjoyed fitting into more of a square dance band, or Uncle Earl when I was in that band, just doing simple, very simple accompaniment to what other people are doing, or using the banjo to write my own songs. That's really the area of music that I've enjoyed using the banjo to be a part of. But now that I'm playing with Bela, if you're really gonna be in a collaboration, especially me with Bela, you have to start to learn to do things that incorporate the other person's skills and style as much as possible, so that the collaboration can really go to a deep place. And that means changing and learning a lot. And so I've changed and learned a lot as a player with Bela. And one of the first times that happened was sitting down and learning New South Africa with Bela, which is not an old time tune in the slightest. And then learning all the different parts and how to accompany all the different parts, but also learning melodies. And then eventually Bela creating a space within the song for me to solo. And saying, go for it, and creating a solo. And I generally stick to the same kind of idea for the solo every time I play it. But I will say that things change up here and there. And as I've gotten more and more and more comfortable on the song, the idea of soloing and feeling some freedom in that space, it has really grown on me. But it hasn't come easier because I necessarily even wanted it, but because it's the right thing to do for this collaboration, and now I'm really enjoying it, and I really like that I'm becoming a better banjo player as a result.
There have been a few times when I was playing with somebody who had skills that were different than mine, who believed in me, and I didn't believe in myself, and one of them is Edgar Meyer, back when we were working on some classical music, way, way back in the early 80s, and he said, let's work up some Bach stuff, and I said, well, I can't read, and he said, well, I'll teach it to you one note at a time. And I was like, I don't know if I can do that. I didn't say it, but I didn't know if I could do it. And occasionally, as he started writing music and incorporating me in it, he just assumed I could do it instead of assuming that maybe I couldn't do it. And that was very helpful for me. The same thing with Chick Corea. When we played together, he just assumed I would be able to make it work. He didn't worry about whether I could. And so I take that approach with Abby. I assume she can make it work. I've heard her play a lot of different ways, and it's always really earthy and strong and inventive and all the things I love about music. So when I write a tune, my first go-to place is that there is a way we can do this together rather than that there isn't. And usually it works out that way.
South Africa, courtesy of Bela Fleck and Abigail Washburn from their new recording. They're out on tour as a duo. What is it about a duo performance that is unique or challenging?
Well, I think there's something very special and gettable for both an audience and musicians about a duo in that it's a very simple interaction. It's just two people. And a lot of times with the music that I play, it can be pretty complicated music sometimes. And the more stuff, the more layers, the more parts, the more people playing, sometimes the harder it is for people to follow. But when it's two people, there's also something very exposed about it that's appealing. Yeah.
I think that's the thing about the duo for me, is that it's thrilling is a good word because it's so exposed. You feel like if you mess up, it's going to be really evident. There's no hiding in a duo. And I think that can be exciting for the audience. It's certainly exciting for the musicians. It's a little bit scary.
When you think about like diving, you know, like back to athletics.
We know so much about. Now that you know as a golfer.
But I do know that you're graded by the difficulty of the dive. And so I think when a musician is on stage, unconsciously, the audience grades them on the difficulty of what they're doing. And so when they see someone go out and play solo, they know that's really hard, that takes some nerve, and they're automatically in your court if you go out and play by yourself because they know that takes some moxie. And a duo is one step less exposed than a solo, but it still takes some nerve and some. The one thing that I think that's true in every kind of musical setting, whether it's a solo, a duo, or a 10-piece band or an orchestra, is you try to make complete music. That's in all of these settings. Try to figure out what's it going to take to make this music complete. In a larger group, you figure out, oh, I need to play less and less. I need to find simple parts that help the whole group sound good. And the smaller the group gets, the more fundamental your parts get, to where maybe now you're playing the actual bass line or the actual roots of the chords to let the audience know, you know, where the rhythm is and where, you know, what's the harmony.
Yeah.
That's all part of the art of it, figuring out how to play in each setting.
What do you do when you need to have a tiebreaker on making a decision? Because if you're leading a group, the leader makes it, or if it's a three-piece, you know, you can take a vote. What do you do in a duo?
Well, we don't have many situations where we can't fairly fluidly and quickly come up with a way to find middle ground. But we did have a situation where, luckily that's true in our partnership and our life too. So it's we like being together, and that's part of the reason why. But occasionally there has been moments where we both feel so strongly that we have, you know, the other person is wrong. That there's one particular situation where there's a song on our record called Little Birdie. I had really started the whole concept of the song and gotten the thing going, you know, the first verse and chorus, and felt pretty strongly the lyrics should go in a certain direction. But at the time when the words really needed to be written, I was extremely busy and having trouble focusing on the record because Juno was an infant. And I just was not sitting down and writing lyrics. And so Bela said, you know, can I just give it a shot? And so he did. And he came up with some words that...
I came up with three different sets of lyrics. I was so concerned about how late we were on getting this record done. I just started writing all these lyrics.
Mm-hmm. And he's never really fancied himself a lyric writer before, so this is new territory. And he came up with three different versions, and I finally did come up with another version. And I really did like my version, and I felt really attached to the idea that this was the song that I had started, and I knew what it needed to be like. And Bela came up with a version that was really cool, too, and more of a story song. Mine was a little bit more of a sort of a philosophical, like, kind of thing about birds and jumping to the sky or falling to the ground and that being a metaphor for courage and life and stuff like that. And, we played the two different versions because we recorded both of them, and we sent them around to five or six
friends. A focus group.
Five or six friends, just an email. We only heard back from three of them, and they all liked Bela's version. And I was a little bit heartbroken, but we agreed to go with whatever. You know, we just needed somebody to break the tie. So we went with Bela's version. I do love it. I it's not that I didn't like it. I just really liked mine more. But I don't even remember what mine was anymore.
I'm sure the bird almost dies.
Well, the bird almost dies in Bela's version.
That's right. Almost gets eaten, right?
Almost gets eaten, but the mama comes down and swoops her baby bird up and saves him.
From a crocodile.
Two little birdies all in the nest. One little birdie's just a taking.
It's dangerous in this world below. Tales your mom tells are real. Now you're gonna be my evening meal. Jess and come, the sound of wings. Mama grabs a birdie and flies. Little birdie, why do you fly so soon? Little birdie, why do you fly so soon? Here's your mama been gone too long. Here's your mama been gone too long. Here's your mama been gone too long.
Song Little Birdie featuring Bela Fleck and Abigail Washburn. They're our guests on this evening's Flipside. By the way, that was Abigail on the Jordan McConnell fretless banjo and Bela Fleck on the gold tone cello banjo. With this army of banjos and these ways of working out your creative process, it seems like you can face anything together, including being on Being with Krista Tippett. How was that experience?
Tell me if I'm wrong, Bela, but I was really nervous because I knew the show. I love the show deeply. I have such an immense respect for the platform and for Krista Tippett and all the people she's interviewed. I mean, just the greatest spiritual thinkers around the world. So I was just really nervous. I wanted to offer something meaningful to the people that were listening. And I, you know how you can just try too hard sometimes? So I was like writing and trying to brainstorm things I'd want to say and how I'd want to say them and taking it just so seriously. And Bela was sort of like, I don't even know what this program is. It's probably no big deal. I'm just going to go wing it, you know? And of course he did beautifully, you know? And here I am, I was just like shaking and, you know, sweaty palms and everything. But I still think the whole, despite our different approaches to prepping for it, I feel like we both really, it was very comfortable. It ended, don't you think, Bela? It just ended up being very comfortable and fun.
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely petrified of like having to talk about like religion or stuff that I still haven't even completely clarified what I think about and being expected to speak about it on a national stage. I could speak about banjo playing. That's like my religion. But this was a little bit out there. And then, you know, of course, Abby was really nervous about it. But I tend to do the best on things when I relax and just speak naturally, not when I plan in terms of talking. In fact, I think I'd be worse at reading something or planning everything out when it comes to talking. So anyway, I think we both played our own game and we played our own games together, and it worked, luckily.
Indeed it did, and indeed it does. In fact, Bela Fleck and Abigail Washburn will be bringing this music to Knoxville at the Bijou Theater on Saturday, February the 20th at 8 p.m. Thanks again to our guests, Abigail Washburn and Bela Fleck, for joining us on Flipside. This is Todd Steed. I'll see you around town, if not further afield.